And we're back. Hi, folks. Welcome to our podcast. I am John Galt, and it's great to be back with you again. Been on hiatus here for, several months, and just really happy to be back here with you. I don't think we have talked since, last November. It was sometime around Thanksgiving, And just a lot of stuff has been going on here in the Gulch, and I haven't really had the opportunity to sit down and do a podcast. And plus, there's also the fact that some time had passed, I kind of felt like, when I do come back, I really want to do something special. But when you think that way, you tend not to get things done. So I've just decided to just sort of jump back into it here. I don't know exactly what kind of format we're going to use. I've bounced things around before as to how often to do this, and ostensibly I'd like to do it at least a few times a week, and maybe just short little broadcast given whatever is the news of the day. I don't know. I plan these things and it doesn't work out that way. Obviously, I didn't plan to have like a several month hiatus here, but these things happen. But there's so much going on in the world, and I think there's so much of a need for all of us to try to get in touch with each other, to get the word out, and I want to do my little part of this. So rather than hoping for some overblown kind of thing to happen, I'm just jumping back into it with both feet. And it's funny because we've actually, the podcast has continued to be quite popular even while it's been on hiatus. At one point, I believe we were, for a short time, it was the number one podcast in the news and politics category of the Podomatic system that we use. And that was out of, must have been probably 200, 250 other podcasts. So that was pretty cool. Didn't last too long, but it's kind of hard to keep those ratings up when you're not doing new shows for months and months. But anyway, so we're back. And really happy to be here with you. I don't know how long today's podcast will go on. Just whatever feels right. First, the first thing I'd like to do is to deal with some of the comments that I've gotten on the podcast. There's a, if you go to the website, and that's johngalt.podomatic.com. If you go to the site itself, as well as being able to play these episodes, you can also leave comments. And so since last time, I've had some comments here that I find really quite fascinating. So I'd like to talk about those first, because some of those will pertain to the news stories and the like that we'll be talking about. So let's take a look at those first. Let's see. First, we have a comment. This is from, I believe this is a comment on episode 17. We've had, I think, two episodes here since we've done any kind of commenting on the commenters. But we got a comment here. This was episode 17. It was entitled, If We're Birthers, Are the Leftists Deathers? And that was just me making a little comment regarding the whole, the fact that people who wonder about Obama's birth certificate, the fact that they are called birthers. I personally don't tend to be one of those folks. It's entirely possible. It's entirely possible that he may not be eligible for the presidency because of his birth. I don't know. The point is, it's not something that I think is probably going to make any difference whatsoever. Even if we could absolutely prove that such is the case, I'm not sure at this point it would make any difference given what's going on in this country. I think the more important thing to realize here is that there's so many better reasons to be upset with this president than, with whether or not he happened to be born in this country. I understand that the people who are concerned with that, and more power to you, I'm just not sure if that's really going to get us anywhere. I think what we need to do is to try to deal with this guy's policies, because that's what's dangerous. But anyway, so that episode 17 was, that was the title of it. So I've got a comment from John here who says, just very succinctly, yes, they are. Deathers, that is, referring to the folks on the left. And, I agree with you, John. I think one of the reasons that I found myself turning away from being the leftist that I used to be, being the liberal that I used to be, especially here in more recent years, is there's a real dark side to it. It's not just the cynicism about the nature of humanity, which is very definitely there, right? I mean, they assume that if government is not there to shake a big stick at us and make us be good people, that we won't be, that we'll treat everybody terribly, and we'll be racist, and we'll be homophobes, and we will let people starve because we're so callous. That's a problem, and that's one of the reasons that one of the things that pushed me away from that kind of mindset. But beyond that, there is just this preoccupation with death. And it's not just, I mean, you could certainly make the argument in terms of like abortion and the like, and that's you know, that's certainly an argument that can be made. But even beyond that, I mean, if you look at the advocacy of things like Dr. Kevorkian and the Terry Schiavo thing and so many other things, there's a real darkness to what a lot of the folks on the left believe. Not everybody, certainly not everybody. I definitely know some very upbeat folks who are left of center. But there's something about it in and of itself, which to me, I don't know, it seems like more of a destructive thing than it does a productive one. But anyway, so that's what John had to say. And then next up, we have a comment from Mike, who said, I came across some of your responses on an article that was posted on Drudge through a Politico article. You were verbally skewering some liberals. I have to admit it was the first time I have laughed out loud in a long time. Please keep fighting the valiant fight, and I only hope we have more brainy ones like you out there. Well, thank you very much, Mike. I don't know about the brainy part, and certainly there are a lot of folks who would argue with that. You make a good point there about laughing out loud. I think we'll probably talk about this more in this episode, but you know, one of the things that we absolutely have to make sure that we do is keep laughing. I mean, not just for our own sanity in the midst of all this, because we absolutely have to do that. But even beyond that, I think one of the ways that the folks on the left have been able to get a certain amount of, you know, a certain triumph over us is that they kind of own the airwaves and the like when it comes to humor. Now, not totally. There are certainly some very funny folks whose politics are closer to ours. I mean, I think it's one of the reasons that Rush Limbaugh has done as well as he has, because he's been able to laugh at these people. If Rush had only played it straight, I don't think he would have had the kind of impact and the kind of popularity that he has. The fact that he's able to laugh at these people has made him stand out, because we don't see that much of this. I mean, you do in little dribs and drabs, but for the most part, it hasn't really worked as well. If you remember, you know, Fox had kind of a little sketch comedy show that they were starting to do for an episode or two. Never really seemed to catch on. And you know, I was thinking about this just the other day, as a matter of fact. If you look at, like, let's say the Daily Show. Right, and I cannot stand Jon Stewart. I don't think he's a good human being. I know a lot of people might disagree with that. Especially the people who say, I get all of my news from The Daily Show, which terrifies me, quite frankly. But I think about that. Now, we've seen everybody across the political spectrum skewered by Saturday Night Live, right? Have you ever seen anyone on Saturday Night Live, any sketch on Saturday Night Live, make fun of The Daily Show? Well, they don't. They don't. And why shouldn't they, right? I mean, they do everything else. But The Daily Show has become this sort of sacred thing for them, I think. So they leave hands off of it. And personally, I hear a lot of people talk about the Colbert Report. I like Stephen Colbert. I think that's a funny show. I think you can enjoy the Colbert Show more, though, if you kind of take him seriously. I mean, I realize it's satire. It's kind of a parody of the whole O'Reilly thing. But, you know, if you take Colbert at least a tiny bit seriously in the midst of all of the humor, I think it works better, right? Because, you know, he may be playing this you know, this sort of version, the left's version of what people on the political right are, and he overplays it tremendously. But I think there's more truth in what you get off of the phony Stephen Colbert than what you get off of the real life Jon Stewart. But anyway, back to the matter at hand. I think we have to learn how to laugh at, well, at our situation, certainly, but also at the folks whom we are, for lack of a better term, that we are up against. And I hate even saying that, because I like to consider all of us American citizens. It's just that some of our American citizens are doing stuff that, in the long run, I think is going to be so harmful to us. But we've got to be able to laugh. And I really do think it's one of our best weapons. I think that you can get so much more done sometimes with humor than you can by just playing it straight. So anyway, thanks for your comments, Mike. I really appreciate that. Next up, we have a comment here from Ben Prisk, is this gentleman's name. The comment itself, it's very short. He says, "Get a brain, dude. Not a left brain necessarily, just a smart one. You're really sad." Now, my first thought when I read this was, that just the name, Ben Prisk. There's a fellow that works in animation. He's done Aqua Teen Hunger Force and Squidbillies and various things, whose name is Ben Prisk. And he's quite a talented guy, especially like his background work and the like. And which, you know, Ben Prisk seems like a fairly unusual name. And so my first thought was, gee, I wonder if this is the same fella. And I don't know if it is. So if you are a different Ben Prisk, my apologies here, and you can please let me know, and so we can clear this up. But I'm assuming that's who this is. And of course, then my second thought becomes, you know, I'll bet if this is in fact that Ben Prisk, he's probably kind of surprised that I've heard of him. Not because he's necessarily an obscure fella or anything, because I'm sure he's very well known, you know, in his circles. But what got me thinking about that is the fact that he's probably surprised that I know who he is for this reason. Because see, Ben, I work in a very similar field to you. We kind of travel in the same circles when I'm not doing this podcast, right? So you and I both know that the people who do the kind of work that we do, probably 95% of them are left of center. I mean, you can try to say otherwise, but come on now. We both know this from personal experience. Most of the people in our line of work, in the areas of entertainment that we work in, tend to be left of center. So if, in fact, you're one of those folks who kind of buys into the stereotype of people on the political right, the stereotype that exists in the line of work that we're in, Ben, you might well say, well, how could, why would he know who I am? I mean, these people are only concerned with clinging to their guns and Bibles and watching their NASCAR. And, you've got this really typical kind of, view of everyone as hillbillies and rednecks and, what have you. And I should mention, by the way, when I mention that about NASCAR, I hope the audience here understands, I am not putting down NASCAR. I think NASCAR is a great thing. My point is there are people out there who make the supposition that if you like NASCAR, you must be some sort of fill in the blank. You're a hillbilly, you're a redneck, you're less intelligent than they are, blah, blah, blah. I don't agree with that. I think NASCAR is a fine thing. I'm not a big NASCAR fan myself, but I understand, the kind of persecution that NASCAR people have to deal with, because of it. I mean, I myself, I'm a big fan of professional wrestling, right? Which gets the same kind of stuff. Oh, if you think professional wrestling is a good thing, then you're an idiot, you're lowbrow, blah, blah, blah. These are people who just don't get it. A lot of times they're the same kind of people that cannot see the beauty in something like the work of the Three Stooges, right? That's lowbrow. People who are, and I have said this for years, there are generally two kinds of people that enjoy the Three Stooges. Really, really smart people and really, really dumb people. Okay, dumb people get it on a very basic level, right? Smart people really get it, beyond that. They understand the Stooges, who were very bright men themselves. It's usually those folks in the middle that don't really seem to get the Stooges. But anyway, my point about that is, there's a certain amount of elitism. So I could see if in fact, Ben, you're the guy that I'm thinking of, that you might think, well, gee, you know, why would this Yahoo know who I am? Because, you know, he can't possibly appreciate the kind of stuff that I do. Well, I can. And if, in fact, you are that Ben Prisk, as I said, I think you've done some really nice work. And were you to see my work or, you know, experience it, you might like it too. Maybe you have and you don't even know it. That's neither here nor there at the moment, though. Now, here's the thing. Let's deal with Ben's actual comments to me. Again, Ben said, get a brain, dude. Not a left brain necessarily, just a smart one. You're really sad. Now, Ben, because I do admire your work, presumably, that makes me a little sad. You know, not the kind of sad that you're accusing me of being, I'm sure. But, and not the fact that you don't agree with me about something. No problem. Most of the people I know, as I said, are on the political left, and they don't agree with me on things. That's absolutely fine. More power to me. Because it gives me, you know, something to rail against. I mean, sometimes it's good to have opposition out there. So that's not a problem. What bothers me, Ben, is that theoretically, you should be a pretty bright guy, right? But you're making just these... the same kind of comments that people presumably of far less mentality than you should be making. You've done the same thing that so many people on the left do. You have not left any kind of a specific response to anything that I have said here. Now, and I'll be honest with you, I think there's a pretty good chance you have not actually listened to my podcast for that reason. You don't say anything specific here. You don't say, okay, John, you said this, and here's why I disagree, here's why you're wrong. You didn't do any of that. Just a real quick blanket kind of, you know, I'll take a shot at you. As I said, that makes me a little sad because I would have expected better from you. But let's look at what you did say. Get a brain, dude. Not a left brain necessarily, just a smart one. Okay, now see, that is unfortunately so typical of what I see on a daily basis from people on the left side of the political spectrum. If you do not agree with them, the first thing they say, almost invariably, the first thing they say, and the thing that on which they most concentrate is, well, if you don't agree with me, you am not smart. You am not smart like me, if I may talk like a bizarro. All right? I see it constantly. And when you look at people on the left trying to insult people on the right, that is the number one thing they will go for. You're not educated. You haven't been to college. You like NASCAR, as I said earlier, right? You let Limbaugh and Beck do all your thinking for you, right? You just follow the party line. You can't think for yourself. Well, let me tell you, as I've said, I've been all over the political spectrum. At one point, for a large portion of my life, I was so far to the left, Ben, I probably made you look like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. Okay? And then, like I said, about the time of grad school, things started changing for me. And I started looking at these things in a different way. And I started realizing the things that I believed far too often were hurting more people than they were helping. But my point is that I have been all over the political spectrum, so I have had to deal with all sorts of different people. And I will tell you, and I firmly believe this, the people that I have known who are right of center overall are a much more educated, a much more informed group of people than anyone that I met on the left. Now, there are exceptions. There's some very bright people on the left-hand side. There absolutely are. I'm talking overall, though. And in fact, they've done various studies and surveys and the like in recent years, which will say that is true. People who are on the right side of the political spectrum tend to be more informed. They know more about what's going on at any given moment. They know more about the history of our government, about the Constitution. Definitely about economics. We just saw a study on that recently, and it was shameful, shameful how much people on the right know about economics as opposed to people on the left. People on the left are so economically ignorant. And, you know, I know this from the classes that I teach. which I will hear people say things in class that, well, I think I've mentioned this on previous shows. I've had people in class say, well, all we have to do to pay for all the government programs is to keep printing up more money. They have no concept, you know, that money is only worth something because it's finite. They think that we can just keep printing it up, give everybody $1 million and we'll all be rich. Now, unfortunately, that idea of, hey, let's just keep printing more money has become an actuality. I mean, at one time when I would hear someone in a class say this, I would feel sad, but I would also feel a certain amount of laughter about this notion. But that's what we're doing now. I mean, just recently, Obama said the same thing, basically. We're just going to have to print up more money. That's how we're going to get out of this. It's one of the reasons why I no longer believe that Mr. Obama is just, you know, someone who's looking out for the best interest of this country. I don't believe that anymore. You cannot look at this guy. Look, there's only two possibilities. He's either the most incompetent president we have ever had, or he's doing this stuff purposely for whatever reason to screw stuff up. And I don't believe he's that incompetent. He's not a stupid man. But when you look at what he's doing to us economically, anyway, I'm getting way off on a tangent here. My point is, Ben, is that like so many folks like yourself, you have not in any way refuted anything that I have said. I mean, I don't just get on this podcast and say, oh, you know, liberal bad, conservative good. I don't do that. I give specifics. I talk about specific things out of the news, specific examples, and I tell you why I have a problem with it, and why, in my opinion, maybe you should too. But you didn't refute any of that, Ben. You didn't say, oh, here's why I don't believe this. Here's why you're wrong. You didn't. All you did was to make a little shot, right? A little drive-by attack on me. Well, you know, you're welcome to do so. But I think it hurts your case. It hurts your case. And in fact, I will invite you, Ben, listen to this episode of the show. You probably won't because I don't think you listened to the previous ones. But listen to this episode of the show. And if you have problems with the stuff that I'm talking about this time, say so. But say so specifically. Don't just, me, I'm smart, you, I'm dumb. Okay? That's not getting anyone anywhere. Tell me why you disagree. And maybe we can go back and forth, you know? I mean, if I say, look, I think that progressive taxation is a bad thing, you disagree with that, then tell me why. Tell me why you think it works or why we need to have it. Okay? That kind of thing. And then I can tell you, well, here's why I think you're wrong. That's the way that conversation happens. It's the way that makes people start to think. It's because of stuff like that I don't feel the exact same way that I used to. It's why I have taken such a, if not a 180, probably at least, you know, a 90-degree switch in what I believed. Because at one time, I just accepted everything. And at one time, Ben, I have to say, I would have been you. I would have been you. I would have been the guy that posted something on a website and made one quick little smarmy comment and, you know, and just basically to insult somebody. Because I wasn't thinking. And I wouldn't have been capable of it. I think back now about the times when I would have a disagreement with somebody on the political right, back when I was on the political left, on the far political left. And I look back on those times now and I'm ashamed of myself. Not because I had those views, right? Not because I had those views, that was a natural progression, but because of the fact that I could not argue those views. If I got into an argument with somebody on the right, I would say the same things that people on the left say to me now, right? I would turn to insults, I would call them Nazis and racist and sexist and homophobes and blah blah blah. I wouldn't refute their points, I would just turn to name calling. And it's only in retrospect that I can say the reason that I turned to name-calling is because I had nothing else. I had nothing else with which I could, you know, put up any sort of an argument. So I had to turn to those things. I had to try to, you know, obfuscate. I had to try to avoid things. I had to try to change the subject. And barring all that, when it wouldn't work, you know, you just walk away from it. You decide, okay, I'm going to take my football and go home. Well, I'm not going to be that guy anymore. And if you want to engage me in a discussion about issues, then please do. I'm begging you, please do. But don't just make just a, ha-ha, I'm a funny little guy kind of comment. Because you're better than that. You're better than that. Okay, let's see. Next up, Now, I found this one fascinating. Here's a guy, and this guy, by the way, didn't leave any name whatsoever. Not even, you know, like a pseudonym, or not even his first name, nothing. He leaves no name whatsoever, which right there, I've got a problem with that. You should at least in some way identify yourself. Even if you don't want to use your real name, I mean, I'm not using my real name here, so that's cool. You know, I don't have a problem with that. Maybe you have your reasons, but you know, you could leave something, okay? You know, call me Bill or something. But anyway, so the guy doesn't leave a name, but here's what he said. And this, you'll find this one interesting given the subject matter. He says, "This is not the essence of objectivism. You are ruining an ideal which you truly don't understand. The goal is not to whine like a five-year-old, but to produce results. You don't know the meaning of John Galt. You should be ashamed." Okay. Oh, golly. Where do we start here? Thank you, by the way, for posting that comment. It's nice to know that someone is listening who ostensibly is coming at this from an objectivist point of view. Having said that, though, here's my problem with your comment. Okay, you say, this is not the essence of objectivism. Well, could you please tell me where, anywhere on this podcast, in the audio itself, on my webpage, could you please tell me where I said, okay, what I am going to tell you here is the absolute essence of objectivism? I didn't say that. I didn't say that in the least bit. And in fact, there's nothing that even connects objectivism necessarily to my website or my podcast beyond the fact that, first of all, it's called I Am John Galt. Okay, obviously that's an objectivist reference. And there is, if you go to the webpage, up at the top, there's a number of photos of people that I have respect for. There's Churchill and Abraham Lincoln and Reagan. And among that litany of people, there's a picture of Ayn Rand, who I had tremendous respect for. I have tremendous respect for. But what you need to know here, nameless, Mr. Anonymous, is that at no time have I claimed to be the absolute bastion of objectivism. I believe in a lot of the tenets of objectivism. I absolutely do. That does not mean that I necessarily walk in lockstep with whatever you consider objectivism to be. That's an absurd notion. I mean, for one thing, I would say the majority, not all, but the majority of objectivists that I know, or people who label themselves as such, tend to be atheists. I'm sure not all of them, but the majority that I've met do tend to be. I am not an atheist. So does that mean that I therefore could not be considered an objectivist? Well, you know, I really hate that kind of thinking. That sort of, well, you have to be absolutely this, otherwise you're absolutely not. We could just as easily look at, well, let's say conservatism, right? Most of the conservatives that I know are probably pro-life. But there are certainly any number of conservatives, or people who call themselves that, that are pro-choice. Does that mean that, well, gee, they may believe in every other way, you know, what we would consider the kind of stereotypical ideas of conservatism, but since they are pro-choice, nope, we can't call them conservatives? That's crazy. Or conversely, you know, what about the fair number of people who would probably call themselves liberals, but are pro-life? Are they therefore, nope, sorry, we're banning you from the liberal club? I mean, we've got to stop thinking in such myopic terms. I absolutely agree with many of the ideals of objectivism. And I put Ayn Rand's picture on my site because I have tremendous respect for the woman and her ideas. And I use the name John Galt, you know, as part of that respect. And because I think in this time in which we are living, you know, the very reason that a book like Atlas Shrugged has gone on the bestseller list again is because of these times in which we live. And I think we all right now need to be more of John Galt. And I'm trying to do my part, let me tell you. But this notion that you, sir, or madam, since we have no idea, so excuse me if I'm referring to your genitalia as being rather nebulous, this idea that what you are the absolute arbiter of what objectivism is or must be. I mean, do you have some sort of a signed document from Ayn Rand saying, nope, this anonymous guy is the one true person who understands objectivism? Seems unlikely somehow. And beyond that, you say you are ruining an ideal which you truly don't understand. Well, you know, I'm not a stupid guy. I think by most people's, even by liberal considerations, you know, that whole question of, well, you can't really be an intelligent person unless you have college degrees. Well, I've got a few of them. So I theoretically, even by a liberal standard, I'm not a stupid man. I do think I understand the concepts of objectivism. And I have to say, I am flattered, by the way, that you're saying you are ruining an idea, an ideal, which you do not truly understand. You're giving me a lot more credit than I have. I wish I had the power to ruin ideals, because I can think of some that I'd like to. But I think I understand objectivism. And then you say the goal is not to whine like a five-year-old, but to produce results. Okay, well, again, just as I was telling Ben here earlier, if you think that I am whining like a five-year-old, then please show me on my show where I am. I would say, in fact, what I am doing is just the opposite of whining. I'm not just saying, oh, we can't do anything against this terrible, you know, president and administration, and I'm not doing that. I'm doing something that I consider productive. In fact, Mr. Anonymous, we could ask ourselves, which of us, you or I, are more productive? Now, what have I done? I've created a podcast, which quite a few people listen to. I get my ideas out there, hopefully maybe inspire other people to, you know, take some sort of positive steps themselves, right? That's what I do. I have created something. Now, let's ask ourselves, Mr. Anonymous, what you have done. Well, you've basically typed a couple of sentences on my website, okay? So all you've really done is commented in a very brief form about my work and what I have done. So let's ask ourselves, really, if we're talking about being productive, who's been more productive here? And if we're talking about moving forward the ideas of objectivism, who's really done more here? Me and my podcast, which has at least some tenets of objectivism, or you, who just basically types a couple of sentences saying, well, no, this is not objectivism. I think I've been more productive here. You know, your mileage may vary. People can decide that for themselves. And then you say, you don't know the meaning of John Galt. You should be ashamed. Well, again, I think I do know the meaning of John Galt. And you should be ashamed, really? Again, just as I was telling Mike before regarding his comments, you know, humor. We have to have some sort of sense of humor. You, my friend, sound like you, well, you need to switch to a decaffeinated coffee for one thing. You know, objectivist just as well as anyone else, and sometimes maybe more so, we need to be able to laugh at ourselves, and we need to be able to poke fun at stuff. This idea that you should be ashamed, I mean, come on now. You may disagree with my comments. You may not think that my brand of objectivism meets your standards, but I should be ashamed? Shame on you for saying that. Anyway, let's move along here. Next up, we have the comments on our last episode. I should mention, by the way, the last episode I did was, according to this, is November 26th, and it was for Thanksgiving. The episode was entitled Thanks a Bunch. If you remember, it was largely me telling you what I'm thankful for. I should mention, too, that on the website, along with the title, there's a picture of Barack Obama with a big smile on his face, a big goofy smile on his face, and I've put the words on there, thanks for nothing, jive turkey. All right? That will become pertinent when I start reading these letters. So we've got a comment here. The first one is from a man named Samuel. Hi, Samuel. Samuel says, hello, John. I really enjoyed your podcast. I agree totally with you. Without experiencing the mistakes that are liberal collectivism, people won't learn what a travesty they are. I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you, Samuel. Now, keep Samuel's comments in mind, because another poster comments on them here shortly, but we'll get back to that in a second. The next comment is from Dan. And Dan says, Jive Turkey? Really? You really felt you needed to go there? Now, I've got to tell you, because you can't get context off of these things. You can't get tone of voice and the like. I'm not sure how to take Dan's comments. He could just be, you know, making a joking comment. Like, you really felt you needed to go there? I get the feeling, though, and please, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I get the feeling that he might be implying that, given the fact that, yeah, I said thanks for nothing, Jive Turkey, and I got a picture of Obama, if, in fact, Dan is one of the politically correct types. And again, Dan, if I'm reading you wrong here, buddy, please correct me, because I don't want to do this. But if, in fact, you are one of the politically correct types, maybe you're bothered by the fact that, you know, I've got a picture of our black president, or our half-black president, if you prefer, and I'm saying, you know, I refer to him as a jive turkey. Which I hope that's not the case, because if you are that politically correct, man, it makes me sorry to even live in the same culture as you. Jive Turkey should not bother you. First of all, Jive Turkey, it was a very common phrase during the 1970s in black culture, to some extent in white culture too, but although it certainly stems from black culture. There's nothing racist about that. And in fact, I think that Obama is a jive turkey. I think he's jive because the things that he says are not really true and accurate. That would make them jive, right? He's dishonest. He's trying to lay a scam on us. And he's a turkey because he's trying to do things that I believe will harm the country. And I think he knows that too. So yeah, he is a jive turkey. But realize, Dan, of course, that the joke was that it was a Thanksgiving broadcast. I was talking about what I'm thankful for, so I referred to him as a jive turkey. I also, if you listen to the podcast, and you may not have, I also said that Mr. Obama is one of the things that I'm thankful for. Not the fact that, he's our first black president. I think that's a great thing that we've had a black president. But I say, I mentioned on the podcast that I'm thankful because he is really, he's become a focal point for the folks of this country to center around. He has really crystallized, the kind of the forces that are against him and big government. I think that's a great thing. When it's this more kind of ethereal, just mass, government movement, a lot of times we can't get a handle on it, and because of it, we cannot strive against it. But a person like Mr. Obama comes along, who is really quite blatant in putting forth these destructive qualities, and surrounds himself with people who are likewise the same sort of folks. I mean, it's not a coincidence here. So many folks that he has surrounded himself with have been, socialists, have been communist. I mean, people saying that they want to totally change the system. People saying that Chairman Mao is one of their favorite philosophers. These are not minor people. These were major people in the Obama administration. So when you've got folks like that and folks like Mr. Obama who are so blatant about it, it helps, I guess, the side of the spectrum that I am on, if you will. So I am thankful for him. Let's see. Then beyond that, we have, here's another one. No name. This is simply a person saying, you, sir, are a joke. That's all they say. They don't refute anything. Nothing of any substance. Simply, you, sir, are a joke. Well, as I said earlier, I hope I'm a joke. I hope I'm a damn funny joke. Because jokes have tremendous power. Words have power, and jokes can be pretty powerful words. So I am never going to, take any kind of insult in being called a joke. Hopefully I'm a damn funny one. I can tell you, as someone who, among other things, has written comedy, it's a very powerful tool. Not the powerful tool that's in the White House right now. But it is a powerful tool. So I will not take that as an insult. If you want to insult me, you're going to have to post again and say something else. But while you're doing that, how about saying something of substance? Tell me why it is that you think I'm a joke. Tell me what ideas I have put forth with which you disagree. Okay? That's what grown-ups do. Let's try that one. And finally, we've got one here that says, laugh out loud, this is the most painfully stupid thing I have ever heard. And I believe this is referring to the earlier poster, Samuel, who was talking about liberal collectivism. But this is again from a totally anonymous person. You have to, it's amazing, and that how often the folks on the left here just want to remain anonymous, won't even give you a phony name. But anyway, this fellow says, collectivism is the basis for everything that has ever been done in any human society. What the hell do you think working together as individuals is? Maybe it's a collective effort. And then he says a profanity that I won't mention on the air. Okay, well, Mr. Anonymous, we got to, maybe you're Mr. Anonymous 3, I think. We got to keep you guys separate. It'd be nice if you could just say, hi, my name is Bill. But here's the Webster's Dictionary definition of collectivism. It is a political or economic theory advocating collective control, especially over production and distribution. A system marked by such control. And then a secondary meaning, emphasis on collective rather than individual action or identity. Now, let me give you another definition too here, because it would be easy to just say, oh, well, you just, you know, you found a definition that you know, that's outside of the norm. Okay, well, let's take a look at another definition here. And so that you don't think I am just cherry picking them. Here's one that says, collectivism is the principles or system of ownership and control of the means of production and distribution by the people collectively, usually under the supervision of a government. Now, given that that's what the word means, would you like to tell me how it is that what I just read is the basis for everything that's ever been done in any human society? Excuse me? You know, most of what's been done in human society is because a particular individual has set out to make something happen. Most of the great inventions, discoveries, are because of an individual human being. Now, do sometimes we benefit from working together? Yes, absolutely. You know what that's called? Cooperation. And I think you're confusing cooperation with collectivism. Okay, collectivism is not the same as just people working together. When Samuel said what he said about collectivism, he was obviously using a very specific term. Okay, he wasn't talking about just cooperating with one another. We're not talking about the notion that we should all each go live individually in a cave. We accept the fact that we live in a society. That does not mean that our individuality is not important. And in fact, it's more important than what we are collectively as a group. You know, this might be a good time to mention, especially since we had the earlier Mr. Anonymous, who doesn't seem to think I know anything about objectivism. This might be a good time to quote Ayn Rand, who said this, "Individual rights are not subject to a public vote. The majority has no right to vote away the rights of a minority. The political function of rights is precisely to protect minorities from oppression by majorities. And the smallest minority on earth is the individual." Okay, does that mean anything to you? Any of you Mr. Anonymouses? Yes, it's important that we be able to work together, to live together, if we are in fact going to be a society. But at the heart of it, at the heart of our Constitution, for the love of God, is the fact that we are individuals, and that is at the root of everything, our individual freedoms. That's what's important. That doesn't mean that it's the only thing that's important, but it's from that everything else stems. We do not only have rights because we are a society. We do not only have rights when we are a collective. We are individuals. And no, I'm sorry, Mr. Anonymous 3, but collectivism, which is a very specific thing, right? I just told you what that means. It has to do with government control, all right? Collectivism is not you know, how every good thing that has ever happened in this country has happened. The fact that you believe that, though, right? The fact that you believe that tells me exactly, at least in political terms, who you are. And it tells me that you're part of an unfortunately fairly large group of folks out there who think the same way, who think that basically we exist to serve the collective, as if we're, you know, we're bees or some sort of, you know, some sort of a creature with a hive mentality. We only exist to be cogs in the machine and to keep that machine going. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not the case. We have inalienable rights. There's a reason for that. For whatever reason you think that is, whether that's because we were given them by God, whether you think it's natural law, for whatever reason, we have inalienable rights. And those rights cannot be taken away simply because the collective think it's for the greater good. Although, obviously, that's not how a lot of you guys think these days, is it? No, you think that the purpose of us individually going out there and striving is it so that the collective can get together their Obama money and give it away at Cobo Hall, right? I won't play that clip again for you, but I've had it on past shows, and you folks who have listened know what I'm talking about here. But no, I'm sorry, Mr. Anonymous, but we do not live at the beck and call of the Hive group, okay? That's not why we're here. And in fact, I would argue that far too many of the problems that our society, that all societies have faced, have been because of that groupthink, have been because the collective has decided we are going to, in some way, abridge freedoms because we think it's for the greater good. Every totalitarian regime that's ever existed, right, has said it's for your own good. They haven't, you know, it's not like they're some sort of a stereotypical supervillain, you know, rubbing their hands together, laughing maniacally and saying, oh, we're so evil. They do it for what they consider the greater good, the common good, the good of all, right? That's why so many freedoms have been taken away from people in the past, so many human liberties, so many civil rights. So, no, I don't think the collective is at the heart of everything good that's ever happened. And it saddens me that you do. But hey, join the club. There's a lot of you out there. So, anyway, that's enough for the comments section. But keep those comments in mind, and keep what the people who send in their comments, keep in mind what they said, because that will be pertinent to the stuff that we're about to talk about. I just want to run through some recent news stories, things from the last week or so, and just talk about them real quickly, because I don't, you know, I don't want the podcast to go on too long this time. I don't want to go on at tremendous length. I may end up doing so anyway, but let's go ahead here and just talk about a few things that are in the news. First up, there was a news story this week, a fascinating news story. There was a poll done by Democracy Corps, which is the firm that Carville and Stan Greenberg are in charge of, and which is pertinent to the story, right? Because we're not talking about some, you know, some study or poll done by a bunch of crazy right wingers that the folks on the left can just, you know, automatically rule out, right? This is from James Carville. That should tell you something. But anyway, their survey shows that, and this is the headline of the story, 55% of likely voters find socialist is an accurate label for Obama. Now think about that, gang. Okay, now these are likely voters. 55% of them think that Obama is a socialist. If you look at the actual data here, what it says is that they've done the poll in such a way that they give you a word and you say how well it describes Obama. And you can say it describes him very well, it describes him well, it describes him not very well, and then like not very well at all. And what they found here is when they said the word socialist, 33% of likely voters say it describes him very well. That's a third of the electorate, right? 22% say well. So that adds up to 55% think that it describes him well or very well. And then about another, 15% say not too well, and 25% say not well at all. So about another 40% don't think that it should apply to him. But 55%, think about that. You know, and as I said, this is from James Carville. So, you know, I don't know. The folks that sent me their comments that I read, those of you who thought that, gee, I am just such a joke, I am just so full of it, I wonder how many of you think that this poll therefore means that 55% of the American voters are also, what, jokes and idiots like me? You know, the sad thing is you probably do think exactly that. You probably do. Given the kind of mindset that you have, and again, I know the kind of mindset that you have, because I used to have it myself, you probably think, yeah, well, you know, the American people are not really all that smart. And luckily, there's the other 40% of us, you know, who really know what we're doing, and, you know, we'll keep this country running. It's very sad, in fact, if in fact that is what you think. And if it's not, again, please tell me that. I don't want to set up a straw man argument here and speak for you. Speak for yourselves. Is that what you think? Because I can tell you, some of you do think that. And some of you probably think that, well, a lot of that 55%, they're just dupes. It's not that they're bad people, but, you know, they have listened to the Becks and the Limbaughs and, you know, the Hannitys, and they've been brainwashed, and, you know, but they're not bad people, but they, you know, they believe this stuff when they shouldn't. It's also sad that you think that little of people, that you think they're so easily fooled. But anyway, I just found that a fascinating little piece. 55%. 55%, over half of the voting people in this country, think that Mr. Obama is a socialist. Oh, I should mention, too, there are probably some of you who are listening to this who say, so what? I can guarantee you there are people listening to this who would be just as happy if the United States just embraced socialism like an old friend. Usually the same people who say, but we're already, you know, we're already a socialist nation, right? We pay for our police force, and we pay for the roads, so therefore we must be socialist. You people have no clue what the word means. Just like at least one of you has no idea what collectivism is. But anyway, I found that a fascinating little story. Let's see, what else do we have here? Here's a little piece. I don't know if you may have heard this. Jimmy Buffett he organized a benefit for the Gulf. And while he was on stage, he was blaming George Bush for the oil spill. You gotta love these people. Here's the thing, you know, before when the oil spill first happened, right? You had various people. I'm sure Limbaugh was among them. Probably any number of people saying, you know, before this is over, they're even going to try to blame this on George Bush. And sure enough. I don't know how many times I've heard people trying to say this stuff now. It's amazing. Maybe one of the reasons why we don't have as many people doing parodies and satires of the folks on the left, because it becomes almost impossible to do so. You cannot take things farther than they actually do. You know, you try to, I believe Limbaugh says, you know, he tries to, demonstrate absurdity by being absurd. Well, you almost cannot be more absurd than some of these people are. But, again, this it's Jimmy Buffett. I mean, it's hard for me to take this too seriously. This is a guy who the extent of his musical contributions are, you know, Margaritaville and, you know, Cheeseburger in Paradise. It's not exactly Lennon and McCartney here, you know? Even though Paul McCartney's been, you know, putting his foot in his mouth a lot here lately, too. It's just, you know, I tell you folks, when you get the kind of public forum that these celebrities have, when you have that many people who are willing to put a microphone in front of you and listen to what you have to say, it comes out what utter boobs they are sometimes, you know? The fact that they really don't have anything of substance to say and that they are so wrong in their opinions. I mean, I'm reminded here recently, and I'm sure you folks have heard this, I mean, Woody Allen just came out with a statement that he wished that Obama would be a dictator for a few years because he could get a lot of really good things done in that time. I mean, what do you say to that? You know, Woody, I liked some of your early films back when you were funny. You know, but you honestly think it's a good thing to have a dictator? Woody, as I recall, you were born, what's your name? Alan Konigsberg, I believe, right? Yeah, you're very definitely a Jewish fella, aren't you? And yet you have the nerve to say that you want somebody to behave like a dictator for a few years because they could get a lot done? Shame on you, Mr. Allen. Shame on you. But again, it's one of those deals where we kind of have to take this stuff with a grain of sand, depending, you know, who they are. I mean, Woody Allen, this is a guy who, well, I mean, we know about his marriage to his stepdaughter and all that kind of stuff. I mean, to me, this is probably not a man of great substance and decency anyway. But, you know, to make a comment like that is just so far outside the realm of, it's just awful. And then, and also like Rosie O'Donnell, right? She recently said that Obama should just seize all the assets of British Petroleum. And she added, I don't care if you want to call it communism, socialism, whatever, just do it. Nice. Nice. You know, Rosie, before you embrace communism, maybe you should talk to the families of the countless, countless millions of people who have died because of it, okay? I mean, several times as many people as the National Socialist Party, killed in the 1940s. You might want to think about that before you start shooting off your pie hole about that kind of stuff. And shame on you too, by the way. But anyway, Jimmy Buffett, I mean, come on. You know, I used to go to a lot of concerts. And because of it, I had to wait out for tickets. And a lot of times the venues where I would wait out for tickets would also be selling Jimmy Buffett tickets at the same time. They'd go on sale at the same time. So I ended up having to spend a lot of time around Jimmy Buffett fans. And I'm not trying to insult anyone here who might be a Jimmy Buffett fan. I'm sure there are a lot of really great Jimmy Buffett fans. But most of the time I was there, I was surrounded by middle-aged women in loud Hawaiian shirts who are quite inebriated. Now, I'm sure that's not the entirety of Jimmy's audience. But I'm just saying, you know, those are the people that I ended up, you know, finding myself surrounded by. And again, probably a very cordial group. They were certainly a very loud group. But I don't think that we can base our philosophies on, you know, the genius that is Jimmy Buffett. Anyway, let's see what else we got here. Oh yeah, I just wanted to briefly mention, pretty much the usual suspects here. We, in the wake of the police officer in, Oakland was it? Being found, well, if I recall, he was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. This was the case where he ended up shooting the guy that was prone on the ground with his gun, and he claimed that he had meant to do so with a taser. Now, I don't know how to feel about that. I mean, personally, it seems to me fairly unlikely that you would accidentally, you know, grab your pistol rather than your taser. I guess it's possible in the heat of the moment. It sounds kind of unlikely to me. I don't know if I would have let the guy off with involuntary manslaughter, but that's what he was found guilty of. So, you know, I'm willing to accept that court decision, even though I personally, you know, may have a problem with it. Okay. But, of course, a lot of folks were not happy with it, and there was rioting that went on. And to some extent, I can understand certainly demonstrations about it, right? Because to a lot of people, this probably seemed like a terrible travesty of justice. But of course, again, you also had a lot of folks out there who decided, hey, you know, it's time to loot. And I tell you, you know, I'm in total favor of public demonstration, you know, and there are even times when civil disobedience may be necessary. But looting, you know, yeah, because nothing says social justice like a big screen TV, does it? Once you start looting, I'm sorry, but whatever, you know, point you thought you were making, it's gone out the window. So, again, I wish these things didn't happen. We probably shouldn't be surprised at this point that they do. And I will say, and I don't want to sound like I'm one of these, you know, prophets of doom, but, you know, in the times that are coming, folks, given the fact that the economy is getting worse, despite what they might tell you coming out of the administration, the economy's getting worse, there are going to be more people out of work, there are going to be more financial hardships, and we don't have people in charge who seem to want to do anything productive about it. Times are going to get worse. We're going to have more, whatever you want to call it, social unrest. We're going to have more looting. We're going to have some scary situations. I hope I'm wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm hoping that something happens to totally turn this all around. But at the moment, it's looking grim in some areas. Or at the very least, it might get darker before it gets lighter again. So we may have to deal with this stuff. And I'm not sure, you know, if there are places we'll be immune to it. We always think of stuff like this as being very urban. But, you know, when people get desperate, you know, now that's not the case in this situation. Of course, these were not desperate people. These are people who suddenly thought, hey, I can get myself, you know, a new leather jacket or some Nord tennis shoes or something. So they decided, let's do some looting. But, you know, I think we're going to see some tough situations. It's one of the reasons why the sales of guns and ammo have gone up tremendously. But that started the minute that Mr. Obama, you know, started putting his policies in place. And of course, a lot of folks on the left out there say, oh, well, you know, it's only because he's a black man. We hate him and we disagree with him only because he's a black man. And of course, as I have pointed out on this show, you know, his approval rating started out at nearly 70%. It's now somewhere in the low 40s nationwide. So that would mean that it took millions of people 18 months or so to discover that he was a black man, if that's why his popularity has dropped. Obviously, it's not. Okay, it's his policies. People are not happy with them, and frankly, he's starting to scare even some folks in the middle and even a few on the left. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's good that people, you know, start to understand this and start to get informed. We hear all the time that, oh, the people on the right, you know, the right-wingers, they're just all about fear. It's all about creating fear. Well, first of all, I would think that's a tremendous hypocrisy, given what people on the left are constantly telling folks. Oh, you're going to have your Medicaid and your Social Security taken away and blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, oh, it's going to affect the children. But even beyond that, you know, even if you were to say, yeah, you know, people are afraid, sometimes it's good to be afraid. You know, sometimes that fear is what saves you. You hear, you know, you're in the forest and you hear a roar coming at you and you start running in the opposite direction, probably a good thing. And I'm fairly afraid of the roar that we're hearing out of Washington these days. Anyway, moving on here, I wanted to mention just briefly, you may have heard that a federal district judge, I believe it was in Boston, struck down a federal law that defines marriage as exclusively between a man and a woman. Now, the reason given for this, and this is the part of it that I find interesting, is that the reasoning that the judge gave is that what it does is it upends the federal government's history of allowing states to set their own marriage laws. So it becomes basically a federal versus states' rights issue. Now, what I find fascinating about this is I've seen a lot of gay advocacy groups saying, well, what a triumph this is for them. And it may be. But what I find fascinating about it is that the same argument that is being used to strike this down is the argument that then people can turn around and use if they don't want their states to allow gay marriage, right? They will take the same thing. If someone tries to pass a federal law saying that gays can marry legally, then the states can turn around and say, no, you told us before that question is left up to the state, so you can't tell us now from a federal level that you're going to impose that on us. That fascinates me, and it becomes one of those things that, you know, it may end up biting people in the backside. Now, my own take on this, I think the way around this, I think the, if we really want to make this a non-issue, and I think I've said this before on the show, we need to make marriage no longer a legal construct. If we just take marriage out of the legality of it, if we don't offer tax breaks and insurance and the various inheritance laws and all of that stuff, if we take that out of the notion of marriage, so that marriage exists only as a spiritual matter, right? Being that if you want to get married, you just go to the church of your choice. If they're a church that will marry you, you know, gay or straight, you're married. You call yourself married, you're married in the eyes of your church, whatever. No problem, right? Because there are no legalities to it anymore. Because that's what this all comes down to. It's why there's the whole question of, you know, civil unions. It becomes a matter of trying to get the same legal rights to gay couples as straight couples. Well, there's no reason that we should necessarily have a legal status for either of them. I mean, we give things like tax breaks to married couples, and you can make the argument, you know, it's to encourage people to be married because it makes for a more stable society, blah, blah, blah. Well, given the divorce rate, that doesn't seem to be working that well. But beyond that, there's no reason for that. There's no reason that people should necessarily, you know, have a different legal status simply because they choose to be together as a couple. So if we take all of this out of the realm of legality, if there is no legal status of marriage for either straights or gays, then it won't be an issue. You know, if you're a gay couple, you want to get married, you go find yourself a, you know, a universalist church or something, and you get married. No problem. And nobody could say that you're not married, because what marriage means, you have, you know, you absolutely define it. But it also doesn't become an issue that has to go through the courts, and has to go through legislation, and has to go through the voters. It just becomes a matter of, you know, it's a spiritual issue. It's a relationship issue, a romantic issue, but it's not a legal issue. I think that's the best way to go about this. And let's see. Oh, I wanted to mention this just in passing. We're not going to go into any great detail about it, but for the few of you who may not have heard this, the U.S. government is launching a new program, a new Cyber Shield program, to ostensibly try to protect private companies and the government from, you know, acts of sabotage and, you know, hackers and the like. But anyway, I just wanted to mention, for those of you who hadn't heard it, the program is called Perfect Citizen. And you can't write this stuff. I mean, if they had a panel of experts on the works of George Orwell sit around and try to come up with an Orwellian name, they could not have come up with a better name than Perfect Citizen. That's creeptastic, folks. But that's kind of what I was talking about. I mean, they're either being incredibly blatant about this, or they're really incredibly stupid people. How could you not know the kind of connotations that calling something Perfect Citizen would have? Yikes. Why don't they just call it Big Brother and get it over with? Anyway. Oh, speaking of Big Brother, by the way, you may have caught Big Sis, as they call her, Janet Napolitano. They were here this week. They decided they were going to have a program by which the TSA employees would not be able to access certain things off their computers. And among the things that they were going to be blocked from was what was simply referred to as controversial material. They didn't specify what that was, but it could have, you know, meant anything. Eventually here, because of the fact that, well, it became very public and a lot of folks talked about it, they went back and decided to cross that out. There are things that they will not be allowed to take a look at from work on their computers, but the controversial material will not be among them anymore. I'm hoping they will, you know, they won't be allowed to access things while they're working that might somehow compromise their job. I mean, I don't want them watching pornography while they, you know, should be keeping terrorists off the airplanes or something. But this whole notion of we can't let them watch quote-unquote controversial material, that's a creepy notion. Big Sis, huh? Anyway, moving right ahead here. Let's see. I wanted to play a little clip for you now. This is from Pete Stark, Congressman Pete Stark. And this is at a recent town hall meeting. And this is, well, they're talking about border security here. And a gentleman in the audience, who I think identifies himself as connected to the Minutemen somehow, he asks Stark a question, and then we get this long sort of interaction. I'd like to play just a little bit of this for you, and just listen to this first. Hopefully we've got good audio here, because you really need to hear this. It's fascinating.
The Minutemen want to have something to say.
Yep.
Who are you going to kill today?
Who are we going to kill today?
Yeah.
Well, I just would like to know. Well, actually, American citizens are being killed right now by the drug runs going on.
That's right.
Okay, I want to know why the federal government is not doing anything or a lot more to seal our borders in this country so that we're a solvent country again.
Oh, we can't get enough Minutemen armed. We'd like to. At all, the Minutemen armed so that they could stop shooting people here.
It's not
here.
Our job. We're just citizens. The United States government constitutionally protect us.
Well, so say, we'll try and get you some more arms and get you down there to.
We don't want to go down there. We want to have lives, a normal life. We pay taxes. And we pay to have the government take care of our borders.
Is that all?
Is that all what?
The government should do.
Well, that's one of the things the government is supposed to do. That's what the federal government is there for. They said they were going to do it, and they're not doing it.
Then we don't need the Minutemen.
That's correct. Good. But we don't want.
Let's send the Minutemen home. That's a good idea.
No, why don't you ask the question?
Answer the question.
We want to get your answer.
What answer?
Want smart
answer. Wait. You want to? You don't want to? What kind of an answer would you like, young man? He asked the question. Well, can I answer? Do you mind if I answer his question? Excuse me.
Please do answer the question.
Yeah, what's your question?
The question is, why is the federal government leaving our borders porous for anybody to come in anywhere they want?
If you knew anything about our borders, you would know that that's not the case. Our borders are quite secure things.
How do you figure that out? Excuse me. What do you mean? The people are flowing in here at an alarming rate. Hundreds of thousands of people are flowing in every year.
Yes.
Okay, and so that is not secure.
And how would you secure it? Tell me. I mean, I'm not the government.
I was sent about 25,000 troops down there for one thing, and yeah. I would build a wall down there to make so vehicles cannot pass.
How high and how long would that wall be?
As high and as long as it takes.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. We'll go down there. You design the wall, and as soon as we know, if you don't want to shoot the people coming over, then I'll go down and we'll go and start a ladder company. But I got to know how high that wall is, and I'll sell a whole lot of ladders for people who want to come.
Congressman, can I ask you a question?
This is
a very serious matter, and you're sitting there making fun of it.
I don't have to make fun of you, sir. You do a fine job all by yourself.
Wow. Can you believe that? Unbelievable. This is a town hall meeting. Mr. Stark is there to hear from his constituents, and he treats them like absolute trash. I mean, he basically called this one man a murderer, then he mocked several of the people there, would not just give them a straight answer, told numerous lies. There's a part later in the audio I didn't play for you, but where he talks about this program that they have, which is supposed to, you know, help deal with this stuff. As it turns out, that program hasn't been in effect since 1964. Hey, way to keep up on current events there, Pete. But just the way that this jerk, and that's what he is, an absolute jerk, the way that he talks to these folks. It's like these people have forgotten. they all think that they have become, you know, royalty. He doesn't seem to realize or care that he works for these people. They pay taxes, they vote him in, and he works for them. This is a representative republic. Okay, this is not a monarchy where you can just shoot off your mouth to the people who put you in there, the people that you're supposed to represent. Ugh! What a terrible, terrible little man. I mean, Pete Stark is known for saying all sorts of awful things. But one of the things that makes me so glad that I am living in this modern age, and you know, a lot of the time I'm not. A lot of the time I look at the way society is going and I think to myself, man, I am out of my time. I wish I had been living during a different time than this. But there are times when I think I'm glad I'm living in this time, because we have all the access to audio and video, so that when Pete says something like this, right? Or when, you know, Jim Moran makes some comment about people need to get rid of this notion that they're entitled to keep their wealth, all of those sort of things that happen these days, we can catch them. We can catch them on video, and they can't deny, oh no, I didn't say that. The best they can do is say, well, I was taken out of context, right? Or, as in the case of Acorn, well, it was just edited to look that way. We didn't really say that we would help these people bring underage prostitutes illegally into the country, even though it's right there in front of you. Anyway, I just thought you folks might want to hear that. I could not believe that. If you... It's even better if you go to YouTube, you can watch the video of it. And you just, I mean, what a, ugh, awful, awful, awful. Let's see, what else we got? Oh, here's a great one, okay? It was announced this week that Charles Bolden, who is a NASA administrator, he's really kind of the chief of NASA, he said in a recent interview that his, quote, foremost mission as the head of America's space exploration agency is to improve relations with the Muslim world. Wow. Again, it's amazing what gets said in public these days. This guy is the head of NASA, or at least one of their top guys, and he says their foremost mission there at NASA is to improve relations with the Muslim world. Wow. And according to him, he was instructed to do this by Barack Obama. And he sees no problem with this. I could be wrong, but you know, I remember as a small child, the moon landing, the first moon landing, was such a huge event in my life. It really spoke to me about what human beings could accomplish. I was very young at the time, but it really inspired me. And I guess because of that, I've always been interested in NASA, in space exploration. And in all these years, I thought that the foremost mission of NASA had to do with space travel. I guess that was crazy on my part. I didn't realize their major function was to try to improve our relations with the Muslim world. I'll be darned. I guess one of the letter A's in NASA apparently is for Allah, and I did not realize that. Huh, I'll be darned. Again, you cannot write this stuff. I'm not necessarily saying that we shouldn't want better relations with the Muslim world, certainly with those folks who, the majority of whom, are decent, peaceful people. But I don't understand why it's NASA's job to do this. It seems to me their next goal should be maybe, oh, I don't know, finding out what else is out there in outer space, maybe getting us to Mars or even out of the solar system. These seems like they would be laudable goals for NASA, as opposed to, say, sitting down with some guy named Ahmed and singing Kumbaya. I'm not sure if Ahmed would sing Kumbaya, but I think you see what I'm getting at here. I don't even know what to say about this anymore. And the fact that the president instructed this guy, that should be like his, you know, one of his foremost priorities. And he says here, perhaps the foremost priority was to reach out to the Muslim world. He says, in fact, let's read that section specifically. He says, when I became the NASA administrator, or before I became the NASA administrator, he charged me, he being Barack Obama, with three things. One was he wanted me to help re-inspire children to get into science and math, and I'm for that, folks. And then he says, he wanted me to expand our international relationships. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's in terms of space travel, scientific, I don't know. And then he says, and third, and perhaps foremost, he wanted me to find a way to reach out to the Muslim world and engage much more with dominantly Muslim nations to help them feel good about their historic contribution to science and math and engineering. So basically what this guy is saying was, Obama said to him, look, perhaps your foremost mission, the one thing that you should be most concerned with, is reaching out to the Muslim world and telling them why they should feel good about themselves. Telling them, because of their contributions to science and math and everything, we like them. Yeah, that's what the head of NASA should be doing. Wow. I don't even know what to say about that, folks. Let's move on here. You can make your own, draw your own conclusions there. Let's see. Oh, here's one, and you probably followed this, but it's just interesting to talk about. J. Christian Adams, who was he was an ex Justice Department official. He recently quit over the handling of the voter intimidation case against the New Black Panther Party. Right? You remember? You probably saw the videos of them standing outside the polling place and trying to put a scare into people. Well, anyway, he quit the Justice Department, and he's accused the department of instructing attorneys in the Civil Rights Division to ignore cases that involve black defendants and white victims. And so he's come out now and said, you know, that this is happening, that they're being told to just ignore such cases. If the defendants are black and the victims are white, then they're not going to pursue it. Now, of course, you got people coming up and saying, oh, well, this isn't true. As I believe the officials at the Justice Department said, he's just a disgruntled ex-employee. Well, yeah, what they don't tell you is that just a couple of months ago, this guy got a promotion, okay? In like April of this year, this guy got a promotion. And yet he's quitting now because he's a disgruntled guy and making false accusations. That seems a little suspicious in and of itself, don't you think? What we do know is that after there was all this uproar, after the video of these guys standing there went viral, which, as I said, bless the technology that we have these days. What we know is after that happened, that Eric Holder and the Justice Department basically turned a blind eye to it. Very little happened because of that. I think maybe one guy out of the bunch got a slap on the wrist, and that's about it. Now, I cannot even imagine, because there are few things that should be dealt with more seriously than voter intimidation. Whoever's doing it, whoever's being victimized, should not make any difference. But I absolutely have to think, had there been two or three Klansmen standing outside a predominantly black polling place with weapons in their hands, that those guys probably would have been charged with a pretty serious crime and probably put under a jail cell somewhere. But you have these guys from the New Black Panther Party standing there in their little cheesy uniforms holding nightsticks, and according to several witnesses, yelling things at people, trying to intimidate people to go, not to go in and vote. And nothing was done because of this. Eric Holder basically just said, no, it's not, there's nothing to it. It's ridiculous. But I think it's a sign of the times. I do. And a lot of people have said this, but there's a real sense, I think, with this administration in the White House and with the people who serve under Barack Obama, a lot of fellow travelers, who I think have this notion of it's our time to get even. Not it's our time to make sure that nobody is discriminated against. No, this is the time to settle the score. Well, I'm sorry, but even a little child understands the concept of two rights don't make a wrong. And doing this is not going to do anything except make race relations worse. If we're going to have a standard of justice in this country, and we should have a standard of justice in this country, it should apply to everyone. Maybe it hasn't always done so, and damn the people who let that go on. But we're the people who are alive now. We are, as Mr. Obama said, you know, in his campaigning and the like, we are the people we are waiting for. Right? If we want to make a change, let's do that. Right? Hope and change, I'm all for it. But we're not going to do so by being petulant little children who decide, hey, some people were, you know, had to deal with discrimination before, so let's turn it around the other way. That's not how you make things work. That's not how you balance the scales. You don't keep making them tip back and forth, because they'll never even out that way. What you have to do is let them find, you know, a common ground there where everything is equal. And we're not doing that. And by the way, before anyone says it, I was worried about all of this stuff before. Because there are always folks out there who say, oh, well, why didn't you care about this stuff when it was happening to fill in the blank? I can't speak for anybody else, but I've always worried when it was happening to fill in the blank. Thank you very much. Anyway, moving right along. I think I would be remiss if I did not at least mention that the conviction and sentencing of Lindsay Lohan happened. She ended up getting, I think, 90 days in jail and 90 days probation. Why am I mentioning this? Well, I'm mentioning it because I'm fascinated by the fact that it was such a major story. I mean, the networks were making this their top story that day. That amazes me. I cannot imagine caring about anything less than this. So I will not talk about the Lindsay Lohan case. To me, she just seems like a very screwed up person who unfortunately eventually is probably going to end up killing somebody on the road. But just the fact that so many media outlets decided this was the number one story of the day, it just amazes me. And it says something about this culture, you know? And I can't say that it's entirely new. There were times in our past. I mean, if you look, well, heck, you can look back at the Fatty Arbuckle trial, right? I'm sure that was all over the news. And unfortunately, it didn't matter that the guy ended up, you know, being acquitted. You know, people to this day still remember it wrong and think that he actually was guilty of his crimes, even though the jury took all of, what, like 30 seconds or something? It was some very short amount of time to come back in and say, this is crazy. You know, there's no evidence that this has happened. But, I mean, it's something that's always happened. But at least in the Arbuckle case, we were talking a grisly murder, supposedly. I mean, this, we're talking about, you know, Lindsay Lohan and public intoxication and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's ridiculous. But the fact that the news networks made this such a large story, I think, is the story. So maybe the media is the message in this case. I don't know. But it just amazes me the stuff that they decide is newsworthy. Well, it's for this reason. If you look at the Huffington Post, right? Which I read the stuff on the Huffington Post. I actually am one of those people that I believe Mr. Obama was talking to when he said, you know, if you're somebody who normally just like reads the Wall Street Journal, maybe you should check out the Huffington Post and blah, blah, blah. Well, I do, in fact. I try to get as many, you know, different news outlets as I can and then try to sift through it and see what truth I can make out of it. Because pretty much every source is going to have bias. I'm not happy about that fact, but in this day and age, we have to accept, unfortunately, that, yeah, they're all pretty much biased. Is Fox News biased? Absolutely. But is Fox News any more biased than MSNBC? No. you just have to try to sift through this stuff as best you can. But anyway, to the matter at hand, the Huffington Post, if you look at it, their stories that get the most viewing are not the stories about what's going on in the White House or the oil spill or anything involving politics. The HuffPo, as they're called, or the Huffing and Puffington Post, as I believe Limbaugh calls them, if you look at the stories that get the most play on their website, it's that stuff. It's the Lindsay Lohan stories. It's the Mel Gibson stories. It's whatever celebrity, you know, affair is happening. Those are the ones that really probably keep the HuffPo in business, which is a sad state of affairs. And of course, if you look at, let's say, Matt Drudge's site, the links that he puts up to the celebrity stories are not, in fact, the things that are read most. So there are probably two different kinds of audiences there. Anyway, I just thought I would mention that because it's one of those things that, in a way, it doesn't really surprise you, but at the same time, it kind of boggles your mind. But anyway, enough Lindsay Lohan. I don't want to add to the problem. Let's see. Here was an interesting little bit, and this is from a Washington Post poll, I believe. Apparently, Barack Obama's approval ratings among white voters has dropped from 60% or better than 60% to just above 40%. So it was a huge drop. I find that fascinating because there's so much talk about Obama and race. And how, you know, if you disagree with his policies, you must be a racist, blah, blah, blah. But I find that fascinating because, as I mentioned before, people knew from the word go that Barack Obama was a black man. And yet, an awful lot of white folks voted for him. But his opinion rating among white voters has dropped from 60 to 40% approximately. What does that mean? It can't be his race. They knew he was black. Their opinion of him had to have dropped because of his policies, of what he was doing or not doing. Now, in comparison, it's interesting that Obama started out with an approval rating among blacks of, I think it was probably close to 95%. And I think the last time I saw, it was maybe down to 91-92%. So it functionally almost has not changed for black voters. So, I mean, that raises an interesting question. Everyone knew going into it that he was a black man, and yet his approval rating among whites has dropped from 60 to 40%, but among blacks it's almost stayed the same. So I think, if you were to look at this, you could raise the question of who's really looking at this more in terms of race, right? I mean, functionally, shouldn't his ratings among blacks be down a lot more than they are? Are there a lot of black folks who continue to support him simply because of the color of his skin? That would seem to be more indicative of these numbers. And you know, and I'm not saying, I don't know if that's true or not, I'm saying that case could be made. You know what worries me, though? What worries me is not, if in fact black voters are sticking with Obama simply because of the color of his skin, I can at least kind of understand that. I mean, if you've been, you know, if you feel like you've been underrepresented, certainly in the White House, right? I mean, he's our first, at least somewhat black president. You might very well, you know, kind of want to hold on with both hands and say, yeah, I want this black man to remain in the White House. I feel like I've been underrepresented. I can understand that. I may not agree with it, but I can understand the notion behind it. But what worries me is, what if the black voters of this country are predominantly staying with Obama because they do agree with his policies? That's what scares me. Because obviously that's very different among the black and white populations. And I think part of the reason that so many white voters have turned away from Mr. Obama is because they do consider his policies to be socialistic, to be intrusive, invasive, a little scary. And that doesn't seem to be the case among the black voters? Is it because they have bought into that? Is it because after, what, 45 years now of policies like Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, is it because we have created such a dependency in some communities of this country that they're willingly going to embrace socialism? That's what scares me. That's what scares me. The fact that I don't want to think that there's a large portion of the black community who are like the people from, well, as I mentioned before, the Cobo Hall audio, you know, the gimme my Obama money people. I don't want to think that we have done something that awful to the black people of this country. I mean, I know that we have screwed them over 9 ways to Sunday over the last several decades because of our social policies. We have created what is probably a permanent underclass. I pray that it's not, but it may be. I know that in the last 45 to 50 years now, we have totally destroyed the black family to the point where, you know, illegitimacy rates are something like 70% now, right? As opposed to the 20% that they were at in 1960. Okay, I know that we have done these things. I wish that we had not done these things. I wish that we did not have politicians who are willing to create a permanent underclass just so they will keep getting elected, right? You know, because people are afraid to stop voting for them because the checks will stop coming. You know, it makes me so sad that we have done that to any population in this country. But the notion that beyond that, that we have gotten them to the point where they will willingly embrace socialism, maybe even communism, things which are ultimately going to lead to the downfall of all of us, but possibly, you know, their communities before anyone else. I'm scared of that notion, and I'm hoping it's not that. As I said, I think I could more readily accept the fact that it's just a matter of skin color. I may not agree with that kind of idea, but at least I can understand it. I can look at it and say, you know, these are people who, they may not have a response that I might have, but I can at least understand it, as opposed to people willing to say, yes, please, take away all our freedom, take away all our self-determination, take away all our pride and our dignity, just give us stuff. I don't want to think that we have done that to anybody in this country, but I have to tell you, it scares the living hell out of me, gang. Anyway, I guess that's enough for this episode. I will remind you, and you should know this from the beginning of the show, that if you go to our website, which is johngault.podomatic.com, you can leave comments. I encourage you to do so. I ask you to do so. I practically am begging you to do so. And please, if you're going to leave comments, especially if you are going to leave negative comments, tell me specifics, okay? Don't just decide I'm going to go on a tirade of name-calling, but actually explain why you disagree with me. I would love to hear it. I would love to hear it, and we'll talk about it on the show. And this is how dialogue is formed. But you have to be specific about it. You can't just get on there and, you know, give like a two-sentence loudmouth opinion of something. It doesn't get anyone anywhere. Although, if you absolutely want to leave those two, please do. We believe in free speech here at the I Am John Galt podcast. Anyway, in closing, since we had one of our commenters say that I had no idea what objectivism was, I thought we would end with yet another quote from Ayn Rand. And I think I understand this quote, Mr. Anonymous, but if not, you let me know. And the quote is this: "We are fast approaching the stage of the ultimate inversion. The stage where the government is free to do anything it pleases, while the citizens may act only by permission. which is the stage of the darkest periods of human history, the stage of rule by brute force. Take care, folks.